Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Econ Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And this week on the show, we had a big lapse, last-minute spot we needed to fill, asked around, and thankfully, Steve Chu from My Wife Quit Her Job and Bumblebee Lemons was able to come on the show. Steve, it's pretty good to have you back, man.
What's up, man? Yeah, desperation. Don't have anyone this week. Let's call Steve. Good old faithful. I'm not doing anything.
No, I mean you gave me a hard time for thinking I don't work. You like roll out of bed 9:30, take your kids to class, play some tennis, count sales, and call it a day. Pretty much.
People listening can't see Andrew right now, but he's got this beard. I'm impressed. He looks like a mountain man.
Dude, finally. You can't be nice to me after an intro like that. I feel terrible. That's a good move. Making me feel, ashamed of myself over here. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, moving back to Montana, I had to try to reclaim a little bit of my northern, hard winter dignity as opposed to, from the Southlands where the weak people go in the sunshine. Yeah, but you've never had a beard.
Dude, I'm Asian. I can't grow a beard. What you're looking at, I told you, was a week's worth of...
I've seen Asian gentlemen with beards before.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah. But it's rare. It's rare,
I think. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, you could give it a try sometime.
Nah, Jen would not want any part of that. So, all right, guys, I'm gonna make a proclamation here. I'm gonna guarantee that your listeners will be able to increase their revenue by at least 20% after listening to this episode.
That's pretty bold. Actually, you were, I thought we were gonna just kind of have some life banter, insult each other, maybe. But we got some real stuff to talk through here. And quickly, let me give you a real intro that is not as shameless as the one I gave you, Steve. Longtime friend. Longtime member and man of the e-commerce world. He hosts Seller Summit, which is a conference for e-commerce sellers, a learning summit, which is coming up in a couple months here. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. He writes at mywifequitherjob.com, sharing a lot about what he knows. Actually, it was an inspiration for me. I rarely admit this to him, but it was an inspiration for me when I got started back in the day. Also runs Bumblebee Linens, where they sell beautiful little handkerchiefs for weddings, for all sorts of wonderful occasions. And yeah, good friend that I feel comfortable enough, just wildly, bantingly, blatantly insulting right out of the gates to start things off. So, but always love the banter, the back and forth. But yeah, you were saying AI. Obviously, we're going to talk about some AI stuff and some things you've been doing to your website to increase sales. But we'll start it maybe if you're cool with. You mentioned that you're having a lot more. You said you've had a lot of fun the last 6 months playing around with this stuff.
Oh, I've been having a blast. For like the last couple of years, because e-commerce for a while was, I don't want to say stagnant, but there wasn't anything like really new and novel, right? Mm-hmm. Like on the Amazon side, all the optimization techniques are the same. On the Shopify side, it's ads, retention, conversion optimization, nothing truly new and novel until AI came out. And I'm an electrical engineer, and I'm in the Valley. And like all my friends are like, hey, dude, this is like the most exciting time of year. Why don't you just come and work and design hardware again? I've been tempted actually. Mm-hmm. Because how many of these like moments do you have? Like we had the internet boom, this is the AI boom, and like we're living it. It's incredible.
Is the energy in Silicon Valley right now just wildly frenetic? People worried about missing? Like what is the vibe and the, maybe vibe is not the right word. What is the general atmosphere and feeling like in the Valley right now?
I actually just had lunch with my coworkers, and it's frenetic. Like everyone's working a ton of hours, mm-hmm. trying to get ahead. It's like this huge race. It sounds stressful, to be honest with you.
I think this is one of the things that scares me about AI. Is I think a lot of people look at it and like, oh, hey, this will make us so much more productive. But yes, but not productive in the sense that we can just chill out and relax. Like even just thinking about trying to stay up on tools and learning, if you think about what you don't learn and other people do, you're falling behind. Like it kind of goes back to that old Keynes quote. He was the economist in like, the mid part of the 20th century, who foresaw that, oh, hey, by 2030, we're all going to just live lives of leisure because productivity is going to have increased so much that we're going to work like 10 hours a day. And that may be true for Steve, but for most of us, like it's nowhere near what
I was just about to interrupt you and say, what do you do all day, Andrew? You don't need AI. You've already got your...
You can't steal my quips. Can't right, steal them retroactively. But yeah, like, I don't know. So it seems like that actually, that's kind of the sense I'm getting from you and what you're seeing.
Well, I'm having problems keeping up and I find myself feeling FOMO basically. Like mm-hmm. I can't try everything. And so I wake up every morning now going, oh my God, like, what's the latest new tool? Like, we were just chatting about ClaudeBot right before this, right? And I told you I want to know part of that. But it sounds cool. I mean, if I had free time, I'd love to play with it on your machine, not mine.
But, yeah. My machine. Yeah, that's the hard part. I have all of these things I want to play with and I have no time to dive into them. One of the discouraging parts about all the coolness about AI. But anyway, let's talk a little more optimistically here, because you've done some really cool things. Maybe we can start off with AI on-site search. Talk through what you did there and the impact it had on your business.
Yeah, so I just want to say for anyone listening, like, it is overwhelming to keep up with all the AI. So like, the way I do it is I just think of ways to apply AI to make more money. So, you know, it's cool to generate videos. Like, remember how you duplicated my voice at one of the ECFs? Like, no, now you can do full-on deepfake videos, right? That stuff's cool, but it's not going to move the needle, right? So I don't actually waste that much time on that, unless it's for like Meta ads or something. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that I noticed kind of by accident one day was I was looking at my on-site search stats and they were horrific. Mm. I think I have some numbers here. Like 56% of people who came on my site were using on-site search, and like a good percentage of them, hold on, let me pull the actual stats here. It was something crazy, like 40 or 50% of them did not get any results because of misspellings. And I spent a lot of time on my on-site search once upon a time.
Yeah.
By putting all the synonyms, all the misspellings and everything, but it was just horrible. And then 86% of those people who got zero results in the search, they abandoned.
Yeah.
Right? And this is a huge problem. Think of people who can't spell. There's actually 8 or 9 different ways to spell handkerchiefs. There's like hanky, handkerchief, hanky with a K, whatever. And then I noticed like in the search, if you guys aren't doing this, you should do it. People are using emojis in the search bar, or get this, people are typing in full-on paragraphs in the search bar. I'm looking for a handkerchief for a wedding that has blue, you know? And that stuff's never going to cut it in on-site search out of the box Shopify, right? And so I was like, okay, great. This is like perfect for AI. So what I did was, first, I went through my entire catalog, which is almost 1,000 products, and I generated very rich descriptions. So I had AI generate descriptions that actually described the look, the feel of the handkerchiefs, like the designs, all the intricate details, and then all the possible occasions that it could be bought for, all the, you know, anything that is related to a handkerchief, I put it in that description. And I did that for almost all the 1,000 products. We sell like 900 something products. And we did that for every single product. Okay, so each of these descriptions are now pretty beefy. Then what I did is I created what is called a RAG database, which is just a fancy name for just shoving all that in a database that AI can understand. And then now when someone does a search, they automatically get a result that's closest to what they're finding. And I noticed most Shopify stores, I actually went before this call just to make sure that Shopify didn't put this as a feature. I went to a whole bunch of popular Shopify stores and they're not doing this right now. And they're missing out. So now, just the other day, it was like a month ago for Valentine's Day, someone just did a heart emoji in the search results and it instantly took them to our Valentine's handkerchiefs, right? And here, I actually have some real results here that I want to share with you. Okay, so now my click-through percent on search is 61%, and all orders attributed to search is, so 21% of our orders are attributed to search. This is 5x'd our sales just from search alone, and our search to sale conversion rate is 19%.
Wow, and what was it before? Like 4%?
It was single digits, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Low single digits, yeah.
That's impressive. I mean,
search, and I spent a lot of work on this, keep in mind, back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, site searchers, high intent, you know, VIP customers, just, you know, might as well just flag themselves as that. But so this should not surprise me. I'm guessing there's a SaaS app that costs like, you know, $9.99 a month, and you built this from scratch, right?
I built it, but it's really quick because I feel invincible now because of vibe coding.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did search for apps on Shopify. There's no app, obviously, for my car because I'm not on Shopify. But I did search. Every app on Shopify now says powered by AI. Yeah. And you have no idea what it does under the hood. You know, I actually looked because I teach a class. So I was looking under the hood for apps that students could use. And I found one, but I didn't really have a store to try it on. But it just says AI search. Who knows what that means, right? I mean, there's two steps to this, obviously. You have to put a very rich description that AI can match. And then you got to pre-process all this stuff because you don't want to be, you know, creating this database on the fly, right? So this, yeah. It's a little involved. You got to process all of this stuff, put in the database so that it's quickly retrieved when someone does a search.
Yeah. And so what is your, are you using Claude Code? What's your development environment and kind of setup for all
you'll
this
laugh
stuff?
At this. I was using Claude Code, but then like I found I was spending too much on credits.
And $8 a month.
No. It was hundreds. So what ended up happening, what I do now is since I'm a developer, or I'm an engineer, I wouldn't call myself a developer. I scaffold out like whatever code I'm going to write into functions and architect the whole thing. And then I just use ChatGPT or Gemini to fill in the blanks.
Huh. Okay. Interesting. And you do all like your own development environment. You'll set it up yourself on a server or something like that.
Yeah.
Got it. Interesting. That's impressive. I mean, that seems... So in general, across the board, it lifted your sales by 20%.
Oh, that's just one part of it, but yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. That's one of the things. Not that in and of itself, but it contributed to that. Okay. So that's the first one. What's the second one?
Okay. So the second one, I had a similar idea. You know how when you shop on Amazon and you go to a product page, let's say, for example, you're on the Rough Routes page. Are you still selling that?
No, I don't
know. Rough Routes is this backseat organizer that Andrew used to sell on Amazon.
I love that thing.
I still have mine. It's actually sitting right there.
You still have yours? No, oh, it's sitting in your room, not in a.
Oh no, not in a car. Come on, Andrew. No one uses paper maps anymore.
Dude, lots of people use paper maps. It's a very small and passionate, committed audience, Steve.
And I still have a screenshot of the listing just in case I want to use it against you one day. Anyways, okay. You'll notice on Amazon, there's like all these links to a whole bunch of products, right? They're trying to get you to increase your average order value. So they have frequently bought together. They have related products, similar products. You know, you might be interested in this. Mm-hmm. And I had that on my site. And most people on Shopify have that already, right? Here's the problem with that. You either have to have that populated with real sales data or you hand populate it yourself. Mm-hmm. Okay. But here's the problem. I was looking at my products, and I'm sure most people's stores are similar. Only 20% of my products yield 8% of the revenue, right? So there's a whole bunch of products on my store that don't have enough data to put these recommendations together, except for maybe my best sellers, right? And I did this a long time ago. I hand organized different bundles that were to be bought together. But here's the problem. Like, I did that a while ago and I wasn't keeping up with it. And I found that some of the products that were now in those bundles are no longer being sold because we don't carry that product anymore, or they were sold out, right? We had no inventory of it. And so this was just became, maintaining this whole thing became like a huge jumbled mess. Okay. But this is like actually a perfect problem for AI. So what I did is I still have that database of frequently bought together. But since I sell handkerchiefs, which all have different designs, what I did was I used AI to put together bundles of products that look alike. Okay, so I had AI scan every single image in my entire database and put together things that looked similar. So let me just put some actual products to this. So we sell a handkerchief, let's say, with Lily of the Valley. It goes through and it finds handkerchiefs that look similar because oftentimes when people want to buy something with a flower on it, they want similar looking flowers, okay? And so now what I first do, it's a two-step algorithm. I first populate it with stuff that's frequently bought together if it exists based on real data, and I only put in stuff that's not sold out. And then if there's nothing or if there's not enough, then I fill it in with products that look similar. So it's always populated.
So just a smarter algorithm for recommended products.
Well, no, I mean, it always shows something that's frequently bought together now. And I added a pop-up and I added a similar products box that's always populated. And I also added an upsell at checkout with these similar products as well. And so I noticed that 80% of my products didn't really have a frequently bought together populated very well because of the sparse data, right?
Interesting. Yeah.
And then get this. Okay. So the average order value went up 18% after doing this almost immediately.
Dude, I mean, that accounts for So that's an 18% lift across the board just from that one thing.
Yes. Yes. And I guarantee you that if you're using out-of-the-box Shopify or their recommendations engine, it sucks. It's horrible. Or even if you're using like an upsell, cross-sell app, and you're not using this image similarity stuff, I'm willing to bet that a lot of your products don't have good recommendations associated with this. And if you're hand populating it, it probably works pretty well. But I can guarantee you that if you have a lot of products, I would say maybe more than 20, that's going to get out of hand really quickly.
Yeah. So the solution you built updates itself dynamically so that you don't have to keep track of it.
Correct.
That's cool.
Correct.
That's really cool. And is the reason the other ones aren't working well is they're not powered by a dynamic AI backend that can compare them to other products. It's either based completely on sales data or it's kind of randomized. It's just not as intelligent of a matching engine.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, think about it. What data does Shopify have out of the box? It has category data, like it can randomly pick products with its own category or sales data. But let's say you sell curtains or shirts or stuff. You're going to want stuff that looks similar, right? And you can adjust all of this to dynamically put together something that looks really good.
Do you, for people who may not be in a position or want to go through building their own out of the box, do you have any that you looked at that are pre-built AI solutions here that people can use?
There are. Once again, these all cost like 50 to 100 bucks a month for work that is trivial. And the reason why it's important, like even if you don't know like how to code these things, like it's important just to know what you need for your store and you can find a way.
Yeah.
I think the Shopify app store is going to be in trouble.
One thing I was thinking about today was, like, e-com has had a challenging 2-3 years, right? Like, it's just, e-com is a hard business. Tariffs, margin, like, it's just not horrific, but it has been increasingly more difficult. And I feel like the last 2 or 3 weeks, especially being on X and following sentiment, I'm not curious here if you agree with this, Steve. I feel like a lot of developers are like, whoa, these tools are amazing, but also we're kind of coming face to face with this existential crisis where maybe really high-end developers are still going to be needed to kind of QC a lot of the work that's done by vibe coding, especially like an enterprise level. But there's a lot of stuff that it's pretty amazing what you can do with these AI programming tools. Anyway, all that said, selling, if coding becomes much more difficult, you know, there's that quote, if you don't have a hard part to your business, you don't have a business. I wonder if all of this actually is a competitive advantage for e-com in a small way, because selling physical stuff is hard, right? Like, and the delta in difficulty between e-com and software engineering just got a lot bigger, right? Or it got, you know, harder on the e-com side relative to being easier on software. So I do wonder if, relatively speaking, at least between those two, if it's actually a small advantage for e-com, especially if you're an incumbent.
I mean, at Seller Summit, I'm putting together a talk right now on how to create your own Shopify apps for free. And I'm not talking about like the big complicated ones, but stupid, like most of the Shopify apps in the App Store are pretty dumb. Like there's super simple things that you can code up probably in a weekend, you know, or if not like an afternoon. Just as an example, there was this loyalty program app that wanted to charge me $300 a month. I literally coded that in an afternoon. And what I did is I took the YouTube video features, fed it in and said, hey, I want all these features. And then I had it scaffold out like the database structures and everything I needed. And I had it fill in the blanks for my shopping cart. And yeah, I had like the bare bones working in an afternoon.
That's super cool. How many, Steve, I think you, one thing I tease you about, but I admire, you have an engineering background. You are very capable and willing to build things out. You've got the kind of I think the technical background, like from a server admin kind of side of things, like there's things that you just spin up a, you know, an Amazon or a DigitalOcean VPS and get a box going and install an environment, that kind of stuff, config it. It's pretty straightforward.
It's easier than that now, Andrew. Easier than that. For Shopify apps, there's a one platform out there that will set everything up for you. All you need to do is vibe code the app and you connect it up to your Shopify store. They've made it so easy. Gadget. It's called Gadget.
Gadget. And it's specifically for Shopify apps?
They advertise it for other things, but there's also like in their marketing specifically for Shopify apps.
Interesting. Okay.
And they have a free tier. So there's no excuse not to try it.
Yeah. How many hours would you say you have put into, you have a programming background, but just specifically on AI programming, how many hours would you say you've put in over the last year plus?
That's tough. That's tough to answer because everything that I do is very targeted, right? So like this image database stuff, like it was so fascinating. I was like, because I wanted to make SteveBot for the longest time. And I know you have something similar for your forums, right?
We can get into this. We've been spending a lot of time and resources on AI Brain for the forums that we've been using behind the scenes and it's still in development, but yes, we do.
So I did that for my course. Like every lesson, every podcast, every blog post I have in a database now, and it's SteveBot. Like I even have my picture of me and like as Arnold Schwarzenegger in the terminal, Terminator.
How can I find this? Where do I go?
You can. It's for course customers
only. Oh, but, come on. Not
letting you have access to it, that's for sure.
Listen, Steve, we got it. We should be able to negotiate a deal here.
All this stuff is easy to do. It's just intimidating at first. So how many hours? I don't know, because I kind of do this for fun. Like this is what I've been doing. And this is what you'll be able to do once you know how to create these Shopify apps. I literally go in the Shopify app store for like the best selling apps. And I just go down and say, do I need that? Do I need that? Do I need that? And if I want it, then I'll just code it, vibe code it. That's why I think the app store is in trouble.
Hey, Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Daniel, the owner of dayspringpens.com, where they sell, not shockingly, pens and pen accessories. Daniel's an incredibly kind and gracious guy, was hugely helpful in terms of helping people with the lay of the land at our recent, or not so recent, Norfolk event for ECF Live. But here's what he had to say about his experience with E-commerce Fuel, our private embedded community for 7- and 8-figure owners.
At E-commerce Fuel, I think the thing that brings the most value is just having so many engaged entrepreneurs who are asking questions, helping one another, sharing their wisdom and expertise on different areas that help me as a business owner sort through all the noise. So there are a ton of service providers, there are a ton of solutions, there are a ton of plugins and people that want to charge a subscription fee or help consult in the business. But having kind of a central repository of people who have nothing to gain by helping, that are just kind of thoughtfully engaged in becoming expert and sharing their wisdom with others is by far the most valuable thing. And that carries across to the live events as well as the forum online. It's just something that is very hard to replicate in any other professional setting, in my opinion.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. What are your thoughts on how the tools are in terms of quality of engineering? Because there's one thing to get an MVP up and working and working for your use case, but to keep it working, to maintain it, that's always been the rub of software engineering, right? Like, it's one thing to get it working. It's one thing to keep it working over 2, 3, 4 years, patch bugs, deal with API change updates, et cetera, et cetera. How good would you say the tools are right now for vibe coding?
Okay, so this is what I recommend for anyone listening who doesn't have a coding background. Start with something simple, right? Like a automatic bundling app or something that's relatively innocuous, right? To put together. Yeah. Like if you want to make like the next Klaviyo or whatnot, that's going to require some amount of maintenance and whatnot. This is why I was mentioning earlier, like I always scaffold out my apps. And if you don't have a software background, it might be more of a foreign concept, but I kind of define like what I need to store in a database and like what all the little helper functions I'm going to need to do this. And if you don't have that background, that might be difficult. So just ease into it. Start out with some stupid app that doesn't do very much and get used to just kind of understanding the code that you read, and then you'll get better over time and you'll be able to do more complicated stuff over time. That's what I would recommend.
But getting back to that question, how good, like, would you say Cloud Code, I mean, I know you used some of the other ones, how close are those resources to replacing a good developer? Can you replace like a 7 out of 10 developer, a 9 out of 10, 10 out of, like, how far does it take you up the engineering ladder?
I mean, I'm not a dev, like I'm not a professional dev, so I can't comment, but I do know, like, I know how to read code and I know how to think of all the corner cases that could possibly happen and address those when I'm actually making the app. Like security holes or, you know, what happens if this guy does this? You know, you kind of have to think outside the box because Claude Code isn't going to think of all the corner cases for you.
Steve, actually, was doing something, reminded me of you the other day. My son and I were playing with an Arduino and he loves hardware and stuff. And so putting together a little breadboard, putting some hardware chips on it, coding it up in the IDE. And like, it's fun program. I've never done programming that actually impacts hardware. It's always been on the software side. It's cool to be able to do the software side and see it actually do make changes in a physical environment. That's been really fun.
Yeah, no, it's a blast. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, next one. So you mentioned increase of traffic 25% in 1 month. Talk a little bit about that.
We can go into that too. Let me finish with this last one, which I think we have time, right? Yeah, we're only at 25 minutes. No problem. Okay. All right. So this next one, which made a huge dent in revenue also, was I don't think people in their stores pick up the phone enough and call their best customers, right? So
I'm scared for where this is going.
Well, no. Okay. So here's the issue, at least with our store. You can find your best customers by maybe looking at like how much they bought, which doesn't necessarily always tell you whether they're a good customer or not. Or like the whales, I should say, the guys who spend the most money and the most frequently. You can do it like that. For our store in particular, we have people who are event and wedding planners. And periodically, we would go through and figure out who these people were by just kind of going through what they bought and like all their sales history and everything. And then give them a call and say, hey, you know, are you an event planner? And if you are, you know, here's a dedicated rep and a dedicated coupon code and someone who will handle your order personally just to make sure it gets there on time. And then when you do that, you have a customer for life. And that's why our business is stable. It's because we have a whole bunch of these whale customers that make up, you know, almost 36% of our revenue every year, just based on that. Now, the problem with that, there's people who shop for weddings and they still spend a lot of money. So it's not always easy to find these people. And it's also a little tedious to kind of go through the customer list each time, even if they, you know, even if we have like a trigger that says, hey, this person spent over $300. So now what we do is when an order comes in, we feed in all the order history of that person, all the personalization that they've ever done with the handkerchief. And that actually says a lot because there's dates in there. We feed in the LinkedIn profile of that person and then the Google profile of that person. And now we use OpenAI for this. It outputs a number from 0 to 1 that tells us the probability of it being a business or a long-term customer. It also looks at the email suffix too, right? If there's a company associated with it. And so now, every time someone places an order, if it's a probability like 80 or 90% that it's an event planner, we call them right away as it comes in. And I think I was chatting with Mike Barnhill, shout out to Hydra Fighter. He was telling me he'd started doing this for his business, like literally just calling customers. And it's like a 7-figure revenue source for his company.
That's amazing. That's a really cool tool. We've done something similar with the community. I feel like the number one thing that we can do as a community is to make sure the people inside Ecom Fuel are high quality, vetted, experienced. Like that's if you get one thing right, that's the thing to get right. But we have built a tool that helps us look at applications and it will do something similar. We will always look over every application, human eyes. But sometimes it's like this is just a home run. There's a lot of risk factors actually too. Like, you know, if somebody applies with an email from their own domain, from the domain they're claiming to own the store of, that's, you know, a great sign. And there's, you know, dozens of these in an application. And so instead of spending 15, 30, 40 minutes on an application, looking through all these different risk factors to verify and vet, make sure the applicants are who they say they are, we've built something that, like you mentioned, does something very similar. It goes through and does a lot of those security checks, the background, pulls up LinkedIn, looks at the website, reads and does something similar, gives us a score that's like, hey, this is something you can, you know, kind of look over, make sure it looks good, or this is something you need to do a deep dive on. And it saved us a bunch of time.
I kind of question that method that you have, because how the hell did my wife quit her job at Gmail get through that
filter?
This
is, you got in, there's no way you would get in today. Let me just say that. So Lucky you snuck in under the barbed wire fence.
Anyway, the point is like picking up the phone and everyone has B2B customers. So just picking up your phone and calling them will give you this nice customer for life. And what's cool about like the personalization part, I forgot to add this, is that we noticed, or AI noticed, that there are certain people buying personalized hankies where the date was different each time. And they weren't buying a lot of hankies, right? They were spending like $50 here, $80 there, but they were apparently a wedding planner because there are different dates each time they bought. So that implies that they were, little things like that we probably wouldn't have caught.
How do people respond in general when you call them? Are they pretty receptive? Are they kind of weird? Because it's getting hard for people. Like, I don't pick up my phone if I don't recognize the number.
Yeah. So I don't do the calling anymore. So there's just a script like, hey, we noticed you purchased a large number of linens. Are you by chance, you know, wedding planner or whatnot? As long as you just kind of seated up front and you made a purchase from Bumblebee Linens, they're kind of disarmed. And if they don't, you leave a voicemail and you email at the same time and you follow up. It's kind of like a persistence thing.
That's cool. Yeah. Which one's next?
Okay. So I wanted to, I was spending a lot of time trying to get mentioned in AI, right? Because that's where things are going. People are not clicking on websites anymore. They're doing their, in e-com, they probably found this product on TikTok or whatnot. They do their research in AI. And then when they're ready to buy, they just click on Amazon or your site and just make the purchase, right? I mean, that's where things are going.
That's why I do things, yeah.
Yeah. And then now ChatGPT, you can buy directly in Shopify. I don't know if the Shopify one's out yet. I haven't seen that, but Etsy for sure, it's already out. So the name of the game today is to get mentioned in AI, right? And so if you're listening to this, go in and type in like, who's the leader in wedding handkerchiefs in Gemini, ChatGPT or whatnot, and we'll pop up. We've also increased our search ranking by 25% in just 1 month. Like I did this experiment over the holidays. The day after Thanksgiving, what I did was I collected every single possible question that has ever been asked about all of our product categories and added those as fact schema to our category pages. And that increased our search traffic by 25% in just a month. And it also boosted our AI mentions by a similar percentage. So this is kind of like low-hanging fruit here. You look concerned. Are you looking for a wedding handkerchief right now?
I'm asking ChatGPT, who's the leader in a wedding handkerchiefs right now? And it's giving me information. I'm saying, no. Who's the best store? Moment of truth here. Let's see here.
Let's see what it says. Do it in Gemini too. I think ChatGPT is. I mean, it'll still be around and whatnot, but I think Gemini is.
Custom embroidered wedding handkerchiefs. The Etsy bestseller is outranking you here, Steve.
Oh, you know why?
Because the hanky store is number two.
Integration now. Oh, is rats. It really? Is that what you're getting?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Hold on. No, I'm sorry. It's a top picks. I'm in ChatGPT though. I'm not in Gemini. So
it doesn't matter. I use this example all the time. Anyway, okay. So here are just some tips if you want to get mentioned. AI loves, what are you talking about? We're number one.
In ChatGPT?
I mean, it's going to be different for everyone, but yeah. In ChatGPT. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. It's probably a minor variation of how we're asking it, but yeah, sorry, but obviously you're popping up here. What are the tips for making this work well? Because I feel like the whole AI optimization thing, I've read very few compelling pieces of content or strategies apart from just do what you were doing with SEO for the most part. A few things, but in general, it hasn't been that revolutionary, but it seems like you're doing something different.
There are things, and you're right. SEO is just one part of it, right? So the way it works is the first thing it does is it does a search of like hundreds of pages or whatnot, right? To collect the data that it's going to index from. And then it looks among that data, which one it's going to summarize and then cite, right? So what we did here was AI loves stats. So all I did was I sent out a survey to our customers and I just collected some stats from our store. We've been in 120,000 weddings with our handkerchiefs, right? We've shipped over 1 million hankies. We have 500 varieties, and you just put those stats on the pages also. And like the number of reviews that we've had, the review rating, customer quotes and all that on our category pages, and that all gets picked up and taken as fact.
So you're just loading your pages with stats about your business?
Yeah. Also. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
In addition to the content that answers all the possible questions.
Yeah. So are you still keeping and running a a blog on your Bumblebee? Like, is that something that you're are you pumping out the content to a blog and you just format it correctly for AI?
So here's what I've noticed about my blog. So the blog, while it still gets traffic and mentions, it doesn't do a good conversion job. So now I spend almost all of my time optimizing category pages of products.
Okay. Interesting. Wow. And so you saw a lift in SEO. You saw a lift on the AI front. Are you tracking, using any tools to track your AI visibility?
Yeah, I'm still using Ahrefs. There's other tools out there now. I think like Profound is one of them that'll track your AI presence. And then there's like this whole other game of getting mentioned in Reddit, which I haven't actually seen that much chatter about in the forums about people, how people are doing that. But I got someone from Seller Summit who does it for a living to come talk about it and the results from Reddit marketing, which I think is nuts, personally.
Why do you think it's nuts?
Well, because I mean, the results are getting stuff from Reddit and everyone's gaming it now. It's becoming a bunch of junk. So, I mean, it still works. And Reddit, I think, is still cited like 11%, I want to say. Mm-hmm. It used to be 40, but I think it's been reduced for certain queries. But still, like anytime I do a ChatGPT query for something I want to buy, if you look on the right-hand side, always Reddit is like a couple of the entries in what comes up. And it ranks very highly in Google, mm-hmm. which means the chances of it being used for the cited result is still pretty high.
It's kind of crazy to me that you did all of this by primarily putting stats, correct me if I'm missing part of this, by putting a lot of stats about your business into the copy on your webpage, but primarily optimizing, I'm guessing, the homepage and the category pages of your store. There wasn't a big content push for just content in general. You were really just enhancing.
Well, some of those category pages have 5,000 words of content.
5,000 words of paint on your content? Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. How do you work that in into a usable?
You hide it in a collapsible thing because it's not for humans, it's for machines.
But you don't worry about penalties with Google about that at all?
It's just a blog post. I mean, it's not like it's keyword stuffing. It's literally a blog post.
So let me pull up. I'm going to pull up your website.
Yeah, go ahead and pull up one of my pages.
Okay. So which, I'm on the homepage. Where should I go here, Steve?
Just go to Wedding Handkerchiefs.
Wedding Handkerchiefs. Okay. Here we go. So I've got, Wedding Handkerchiefs, trusted and over.
So scroll all the way down below the products. I mean, there's, and then you'll notice this tab.
I see. Got it. Okay. So for people listening, which is almost everyone, I'm looking at the category page. There's a nice little box at the top with maybe six nicely formatted bullets, trusted on over 120,000 weddings, over 500 wedding handkerchief styles online, et cetera, these kind of like stats things. A little, you know, kind of a small little, I don't know, 2-3 paragraphs, some trust builders as seen as, filtered by category, and then you've got top products. And then if you scroll all the way down, I mean, there's probably 100 products there. You scroll down, then you've got some more trust builders, about, and then other information. I like that. So that makes way more sense than trying to put it at the top.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you should have stuff at the top also. I mean, this is like old school SEO. All the new stuff for AEO involves schema and there's like a whole bunch of different schemas now. The problem is you don't know what's working, right? You just kind of throw it up on there and see the result. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And the frequently asked questions here, I'm guessing these are just kind of keyword based, like you get an Ahrefs, do some searching
Those are questions that people are asking either in reviews, comments, or our support database actually.
Got it.
In addition to tools. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. This looks nice, Steve. This looks really, it's a good blend of UX and like content, better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously don't want to push your products too much below the fold, but at the same time, you know, AI is just looking for content. And I think AI especially looks for the schema, whereas Google can actually probably parse the page just fine. Mm-hmm. Whereas AI, you have to, it reads schema much better.
So for the schema, are you making sure to get things kind of set up in the proper schema format primarily for your FAQs for all your content, or where is it important to prioritize?
I mean, so there's different schema, right? I'm sure your listeners who are sophisticated probably know about all the standard schema, like the product, the rich snippets and all that stuff. One thing that maybe like the, at least for me, like I consider myself well-versed in SEO. One thing that I wasn't doing was speakable schema. So now there's like voice shopping and, you know, all that stuff. You can actually feed it questions and answers that you specifically mark as speakable answers. For example, how long does it take to embroider and ship and embroider a personalized handkerchief? You would have like a nice answer that's speakable, that's under 200 words, that answers that question.
Ah, I see. Okay. So it kind of tags it nicely for when people are chatting with ChatGPT.
Correct.
There's literally
a speakable, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. And it keeps it short, concise. It's optimized for those responses. Cool.
And that's just one example, right? There's other more sophisticated stuff for AEO. And again, I don't know what works well and what doesn't, but I just do it all and I see results. I wish I had a better answer.
No, obviously it's working in combat, the combination of what you're doing is working. Steve, I want to make sure we have time to talk about Seller Summit. Any last things on this kind of front before we talk about—
We could talk about this for a long time. I mean, I got other stuff in the pipeline also. Yeah. One thing, I'm bummed there's no ECF this year. I always look forward to it every year.
Yeah. Thanks. No, I mean, it's only going to be delayed by, I don't know, maybe 3-ish months or so, but we just decided it was in October, getting in Q4, a hard time, obviously, for sellers. We wanted to go back to Bozeman, and Bozeman they jacked the prices on us. Anyway, that was a big part of it. We were trying to make it work, but they came back with some big asks. Anyway, so I just figured early Q1, it's a nice time. People, we can have a little bit of R&R after, surviving the holiday season. People can use it as a kickoff for the year. It just seems like a better time.
Yeah. There's nothing for calendar year 2026, right?
There's not, sadly.
And you're coming to Seller Summit, right, this year? It's April 21st through the 23rd in Fort Lauderdale. We run a private mastermind for that, like the day before, where we break everyone up into groups of 10, each in a room, and we just kind of hot seat style help each other. And then the main event starts. We've got a lot of good talks. So I have that Reddit marketing talk. I have the AEO talk, how to rank in AI. A lot of these cool talks on how to use agents to do your work. How to use storytelling in your meta ads, a whole bunch of sourcing things. Tariffs are still a big deal. So there's actually a whole bunch of creative ways to reduce your tariffs and negotiate down your sourcing costs. And then I'm covering sourcing from Vietnam in particular, because I think that was the only country that wasn't hit big time. I think Vietnam is like 20%. And then there's coding your own Shopify apps, which I think is a pretty good topic for a lot of people, because I hate getting nickel and dimed with Shopify personally.
Yeah. So how much would you say the majority of the content is going to be on AI related topics?
Well, let me bring up the syllabus, because I already have it all here. It's not like all AI, because some people aren't interested in that stuff. Okay. So we have the practical AI strategies part, which is specific things that will increase your revenue and AOV. We talked about some of those things here. Vibe coding, generating creatives. So I have these friends where they have these workflows set up where you literally have this spreadsheet of all your taglines and your descriptions for meta ads. And then you click a button, it automatically generates the images with your product on it, uploads it to Meta. And so you can just really easily rotate your creatives.
That's crazy. That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, I wish I had time to play around with all that stuff. I have someone covering TikTok Shop, of course. A lot of changes there, man. I don't know if you've been keeping up with TikTok Shop, but they're forcing everyone to use Fulfilled by TikTok now. And there's all these like hidden gotchas that I wouldn't have known about had I not had this person who's talking at Seller Summit.
They're forcing everyone to use their own fulfillment network?
Correct. And I think this is a direct shot at Amazon.
Even if you want to do Fulfilled by Merchant, they won't let you. You have to use their own fulfillment?
Unless you use one of their specific partners. And here's why. Think about it this way. Whenever something goes viral on TikTok, there's a lot of problems, right? So let's say you're used to, shipping out 100 orders a day, and all of a sudden you get like 1,000 orders in 2 hours. You're screwed as a merchant fulfilled. And I think they were running into all those problems. So to mitigate all that, it's better if they handle the fulfillment.
Yeah, that makes sense. But still kind of crazy. I mean, that's a fairly big ask.
It is. It's a big ask. I think, like, multi-channel fulfillment on Amazon, I don't even know if they're going to cut that out. If they're going to support that, you have to go through an outside app in order to even use Merchant Fulfilled as of right now, as of this recording.
Interesting.
But I think they're directly firing a shot at Amazon also, is my personal take on this.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to need a lot of cannons to make that shot effective competing against those guys on the fulfillment front. Awesome. It sounds like a great event. And it is April. It's in Fort Lauderdale. April, is it 50? Give me the dates again.
April 21st to the 23rd. So there's like a mastermind where we screen for revenue for that. But anyone listening to this podcast and ECF obviously qualifies for that. But yeah, it should be good.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And it's where sellersummit.com. People can go to register. Is anything else to know if people want to be able to come? I've been there a number of years. Always enjoy going. Steve, you do a good job about most conferences, I think, are, you know, what people get the most out of is connecting with people, building relationships. But I would say your conference in particular, you do a really intentional job about focusing on having sessions that are actionable and actually you can apply to your business, which I think is always really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's small too. We cap attendance at 200. So it'll feel like ECF, I think. Maybe a little. How big was last ECF?
Like 260, 275? Yeah.
So it'll feel about the same size. I don't like large events. I guess I'm kind of shy. Like I don't like walking into a 1,000 person event. No, seriously, right? It's intimidating. And that's why we do the mastermind on the first day. So people have a group like they've hung out with for an entire day. It makes it a lot easier, right?
It does. It is intimidating when you walk in if you don't know a few people for sure. Just kind of to walk into the crowd. Cool. Well, Steve, looking forward to it. It's always fun going down. Weather's always great. And always learn a lot of stuff. So, plus, good to see you there. I always like have an excuse to hang out and give you a hard time in person. It's way more fun giving you a hard time in person than through the internet here.
You know, I mean, I see you running your event and I know you're always talking to people. Like this year, I think I'm just going to relax a little more and just, you know, don't feel pressured to try to do all this stuff.
I'm going to be like, man, is Steve like four cocktails in at like 7:30? He seems very chill.
I'm going to try to relax this year.
Well, Steve, dude, always good talking to you. I love getting to catch up and really cool stuff you're doing with AI. Hopefully this was helpful. I know it would be, it's been really interesting to me. I'm sure a lot of people here will be helpful as well. Super actionable stuff.
Like I said, I can guarantee you guys, if you implement these things, huge results. I can almost guarantee it.
Yeah. And then my wife quitterjob.com would recommend checking that out, subscribing over there for good stuff. And the podcast, you're still doing the podcast as well, right?
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, mywifequitterjob.com podcast. Subscribe anywhere you are listening. And of course, Sellers Summit, sellerssummit.com. And if you happen to be getting married, if you happen to be a wedding planner, or you just love hankies.
That's my linens. Line, dude. That's my line.
Do you say that?
I do.
If you just love hankies?
No, I say if you're getting married, we'll hook you up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, the hanky thing is, I don't know if I'd use that as a tagline. Anyway, but yeah, bumblebeelinens.com. Or if you want to try to reverse engineer all the stuff we talked about today with Steve.
Try it.
Always a pleasure, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.